Welcome to Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the rare disease community.
Hello, and welcome to the Rare Care Podcast. This is your host, Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. We're at the American College of Rheumatology's 2025 ACR Convergence in Chicago, and our guest today is Dr. Jinus Yazdani, Chief of Rheumatology at San Francisco General Hospital. She's also Professor of Medicine at the University of California, San Francisco. At this conference, Dr. Yazdani warned of the potential risks in relying too much on artificial intelligence, or AI. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Pleasure to be here.
There's a lot to unpack. And in your lecture, you touched on some very important issues, and some of them are making headlines today, and all of them concern patients and privacy and general healthcare. I'm wondering if we can start with an overview of the benefits and the pitfalls of AI.
So in terms of benefits, we have many things in medicine that need improvement. Patients have a hard time accessing doctors. We have complex patients, and unfortunately, not everybody gets care that's consistent with evidence-based practice. We have some problems with diagnostics. Sometimes there are things where, you know, I think the human eye can't necessarily detect what we need to see. And so there is potentially an enormous amount of benefit that AI could bring to diagnosis, to treatment, maybe to access to care. But I think there are also a lot of risks. Right now, we actually don't have very much evidence for most of the AI tools that have entered clinical care.
And what are those major tools being used right now?
So right now, we're seeing a lot of generative AI tools. For example, physicians are using AI scribes to record conversations with their patients. We're seeing tools that summarize charts. We're seeing tools that automatically generate a draft of a response to a patient message. Those are some of the things that are entering everyday clinical practice for rheumatologists.
Okay, so in your presentation, we talked about a lot of things. You spoke about privacy, you spoke about accuracy, and you also discussed liability, among other things. But I'd like to start with the basic premise that AI picks up on information that's already out there, and if you're starting with a bias, it's just going to give you more bias. Could you elaborate on that, please?
I see bias as a big problem with AI. AI models had a very rocky start when it comes to bias. We have many examples where data that were used to train these models was not representative of the general population. And what ends up happening is that those AI models just underperform in some of those populations.
Can you give some specific examples?
One of the most egregious examples happened very early in AI, and there was a Google image classifier, and it basically took images and it labeled black individuals as being gorillas. It was just unbelievable. It's hard to even talk about. But that happens because the AI models were not trained on the general population. So it didn't recognize what a black person looks like.
Was there any ramifications? Anybody pay for that?
Well, I mean, it made it all over the news, and I think it was very bad publicity for Google. And, you know, they obviously went back and remedied that. But I don't think that that's a good approach. We shouldn't wait for the bias to cause harm. Instead, we should proactively stress test all of these models for bias. And even better, make sure that the training data sets in the first place are representative of the general population. But I think this is going to be a big problem because many of the data sets that we have in medicine, including for rare diseases, which you're interested in, right now are not representative of the general population. And these are the data sets that AI is going to learn from.
So this is a rheumatology conference. How is this relevant specifically to the field of rheumatology?
There are many ways that it could potentially be relevant to rheumatology. Let me just give you an example. AI models, including image classifiers, they tend to underperform in people who have dark skin when they're reading rashes. And people are starting to use AI to evaluate rashes. So imagine a situation where a primary care physician is using AI to evaluate a rash, and that AI model underperforms in people who have dark skin.
Because it can't see the rash clearly, right?
because it hasn't been trained in people who have dark skin. And so what's going to happen is that those patients are going to be underdiagnosed, they're going to be underreferred, and we're going to end up with the same delays and inequities in care that we already have. Now, it doesn't have to be this way, right? We could, from the very beginning, say that we are intentionally going to include people with dark skin when we're training this model. We're not going to be happy until it does just as well in that population as it does in people who have lighter skin. There is an alternative here.
Well, isn't that kind of an obvious solution?
It is, but you'd be surprised. You know, when many of the models that exist today are examined for bias, these procedures have not always been followed. And so there's a lot of bias already out there.
Okay, that's racial bias. Is there any kind of, let's say, is there any kind of built-in bias against women?
Sure. There have also been studies. I think a really interesting one was just looking at something as simple as a chest x-ray. And what investigators found when they applied an AI model to different chest x-ray data sets was that this model was underdiagnosing women. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons for why this might be. Women might have been underrepresented in the data set. It's possible that they were getting lower quality images. Maybe they were getting them in emergency room settings, or maybe they were getting them in places with older devices. But, you know, again, this bias just creeps up in study after study.
And you mentioned in your lecture that every racial and ethnic group except white people were greatly underrepresented in rheumatology clinical trials.
This is, I think, why we're going to have a big problem in rheumatology, regardless of what disease we look at. Rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, spondyloarthritis, vasculitis, all of the diseases basically do not have good representation in cohort studies, in clinical trial data sets. And so therefore, when AI models are being trained, there are not representative populations. And I think that could introduce bias.
You alluded to a case of a woman who had lupus and had severe side effects on the drug she was taking. Could you elaborate on that, please?
Sure. So one of the tools that we're using at UCSF, and actually many physicians are using across the United States, is called ambient listening, sometimes referred to as AI scribes. And these are basically devices that listen in on the conversation between a patient and a doctor and summarize it, enter it into the medical record.
I'm sorry, ambient listening.
Ambient listening. That's okay. Right. That's right. The devices are actually quite effective. And that's why I think more and more people are using them. You know, the advantage is that it liberates you from your keyboard, so you can focus on the patient instead of having to type during the visit. But these models make errors. And I'll just tell you a story about something that happened to me in my clinic. I work in a lupus clinic at UCSF, and I was taking care of a woman that I'd known for a really long time. She had lupus nephritis and very severe disease. And she was taking a combination of mycophenolate and a drug called tacrolimus. And she developed a severe side effect. She had very severe elevations in her blood pressure, and she actually developed new diabetes on this drug. And so I told her to stop the drug, but the AI scribe, it misinterpreted our conversation. It didn't understand that I had told her to stop the drug, and it instead, you know, wrote that she should continue the medication.
Even though you specifically said stop the drug.
Yes, and these models, you know, they are not perfect. They make errors. And so, you know, if I had not caught that and the patient had gone back and read her note, which she can do because we have open notes now, it's not too hard to imagine, right? She might have gotten confused. She might have restarted the medication. Something really bad could have happened. She could have had a stroke. And, you know, if she decided that she was going to sue somebody, the physician would be entirely liable. And, you know, this actually gets to a really important point that I think many people using these tools don't recognize. Many of the generative AI tools that are in the clinic today are not classified as medical devices by the FDA. And that means that there's basically no governance or regulatory oversight.
So there's really no government agency to regulate them.
That's right. You know, some AI tools, like for example, you know, if there's a tool that reads a mammogram, that is going to be classified as a medical device and it'll go through the software as a medical device pathway at the FDA. But many of these tools that are doing things like listening in on the conversation between a doctor and a patient or summarizing charts, they are supposedly not for medical decision making, and therefore they fall out of scope of the governance of FDA and medical devices. And that basically means that right now we don't have any oversight at all. The front line of defense is simply the physician double checking every line of output from these models. And I think patients need to be aware of that, right? I mean, doctors are stretched very thin right now. We're seeing a ton of patients. We're doing so many different things. And so you just have to be careful. You know, if you're unsure, reach out to your doctor and double check, because, you know, there might be flawed output there.
Well, you mentioned that the models need massive amounts of data and that a lot of this information is more sensitive than ever before. And yet tech companies are the ones deciding what should be private and what shouldn't be. And the question is, can we trust big tech?
Yes. You know, the types of information that these models are consuming now, like private conversations between doctors and patients, is more sensitive than, you know, any information that we have uploaded before. And this information is going to the servers of tech companies. And we just need to, I think, be careful, take a lesson from history. Right now, there's so much pressure to generate profit. And I'm expecting that people are going to cut corners with regard to things like privacy. And I think people need to be aware of the risk. And we actually should demand for, you know, reasonable rules and governance so that tech companies are accountable for these, you know, for privacy breaches.
Question, you're making some very great arguments. How many physicians out there know about this and care about it the way you do?
I think this is all so new. And I would say that AI literacy among physicians just needs to improve. You know, I think this is going to transform the practice of medicine. It already is. And the responsibility, at least in the near term, is really going to fall on physicians. And therefore, I think we need to really inform people, to educate them, to make sure that they're in a position to monitor these tools and protect their patients. Because I don't think we can expect patients to do that. I don't think that's reasonable.
Before we wrap up, I want to touch on a couple of additional points. One was the erosion of professional expertise. You said, quote, if we lean on these tools too much, we actually lose our ability to think critically. And you gave a parallel. You gave an example of GPS. It's made travel easier, but when you don't have a signal, we are suddenly finding ourselves lost.
Yes. And we actually are starting to see evidence from many fields that overuse of AI or relying on it too much will actually make people have less critical thinking. And there are some amazing examples in the medical literature where when people started to lose AI, their skills actually started to atrophy over time. And I think that this is actually quite frightening. You know, we, especially in a field like rheumatology, where we're a cognitive specialty, that ability to think critically is so key to helping patients figure out what they have, to making that diagnostic sort of journey shorter. And I just worry that, you know, if we offload too much of our cognitive thinking to AI, we're going to lose that thing that makes us special as physicians. And so, yeah.
I worry too, as a journalist.
Yeah.
You mentioned a parallel that really kind of struck me more than anything you said. And that was comparing the sudden explosive growth of AI with the use of opioids. And you basically were making the point that, you know, we really should take a page from history and learn the lesson.
Yes. The example, I think, is an important one, because a generation ago, just like now, there was an enormous amount of enthusiasm about these medications called opioids. They were going to solve pain for patients, and they sort of flooded our clinics. Before, we had great evidence. There was a lot of corporate interest behind them. They had these addictive properties, and we really didn't understand the enormous consequences that they would have until much, much later. So the parallel here is that we are, again, rushing into adopting these tools before we have evidence. There's a lot of corporate interest behind it, and I think we all know that AI does have this slightly addictive property. I'm not saying that it's an opioid. This is not like a literal metaphor, but I think there are some parallels here, and I think we just have to be careful. I think we need to demand evidence. We need to demand transparency. We need to make sure these models are stress tested for bias, and we need to make it a feature that professional expertise is maintained.
How much do you use AI in your own work?
I do, yeah. I mean, I use ambient listening for my clinic, and I am using AI for a variety of things like summarizing papers and things like that. So there's no doubt that this is a helpful tool. And I think, you know, the horse is out of the barn. I think people are going to be using AI. The only thing that I'm arguing for here is that we need guardrails to ensure that that use is safe, that it protects patients, that it's centered around what doctors need and what patients need.
When you say guardrails, are you talking about federal regulation?
I think that federal regulation is one part of it. But in general, I think if we can have standards, we have methods of auditing these tools, because we know that the, you know, things like large language models, they change over time, right? So we need that. And then I also think that, you know, end users of this need to be aware, and they need to report issues as well.
Any final thoughts before we wrap up?
AI is exciting. I think that there is going to be a lot of exciting things that come out of it in the next few years. But I think that we have to be careful that we don't buy too much into the hype, that we make sure that these tools are harnessed safely, that we build guardrails so that we can, you know, really optimize their use in the future.
That's a nice way to wrap up. Don't buy into the hype. We've been talking to Dr. Yazdani, Chief of Rheumatology at San Francisco General Hospital. This is Larry Luxner for Rare Disease Advisor.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.